So how you been doing, Michael?
I've been well. How about you?
Doing good. Haven't seen you. We're getting lonely down here.
It's been a while.
Another Comic Pop Visits. We are talking again with C. Michael Hall. He was with us previously visiting about the graphic novel he wrote entitled El Dorado. He is currently in the middle of a Kickstarter campaign for a card and dice game he created called Vampsylvania. You wanted to have fun with this, and then it turned into a job for you in the span of just one day. So we want to start with how you came up with this idea and then create it as a game.
I've been interested in games, gaming, and game design since I was a kid. It's actually part of the same pop culture maelstrom of nonsense that's in my head constantly. I got into comics and gaming all around the same time when I was little, and so it's always been one of those things that I've meant to get around to doing, publishing my own game. I've done freelance writing in the game industry before. But really, I just kind of decided this was the year I was finally going to self-publish a game, and this seemed like the right property to do that with. It wasn't a huge project in terms of handling all the artwork, but it was big enough to be an impressive product and make a splash on the market. So it seemed like the perfect combination of timing and property. And when I started sitting around, working up the visual concepts, when I did the first concept art, I thought I might have hit on something special. So it had to be done at that point.
Was it a hard process making the game? Like, did it span over a lot of rough drafts and trying to get it, obviously Kickstarter went really great for you, but like the actual creative process of making the game to the finished product we see, was that like a big headache and a lot of time and stress, or how did that process go?
It takes a lot of time because you have to play test every system and every little subsystem, and the thing about a good game is that it looks simple. When people play it, they think, well, that wasn't complicated at all. What they don't realize is how much theory and development goes into that. I have a process, and it's a pretty well developed process by this point. So I wouldn't say it was difficult for me, but yeah, it's definitely time consuming in terms of playtesting. And you go through several stages of that, and you take notes, and you've got playtester feedback that you have to deal with. And, luckily, by the time I take my games to playtest, they're pretty well developed. So I don't generally have any major revisions to do after that. It's just minor things. And so it was a pretty painless process as far as game designs go. And the art wasn't all that difficult either. I drew the entire set in a marathon 2-week drawing session. And that was, I'm pleased that it went that quickly. Fastest I've ever drawn in my life. I won't lie there, but it wasn't a difficult process. All things considered, I've been very fortunate.
So this kind of hit you, and it was pretty much grabbed hold of you and wouldn't let go until you finished.
Really, it was kind of one of those things. I was working on a graphic novel, and in this graphic novel, there are lots of vampires and monsters and things like that. And I'm a big fan of that sort of thing. So I honestly couldn't tell you. I think the idea for the game might have already been lurking in the back of my head in terms of how the cards interact, how they work together. And really, it was just kind of a question of a system that I had already kind of been working on, and the right theme coming along together. And then after that, it was full steam ahead. It only took a few months.
So as you thought about, you know, the game and making it, did you always have the vampires and villagers idea, or did you play around with different types of playing games, different themes to it, different types of monsters, or was it pretty much just the vampires and straight through?
I did some freelance work on a similar on a game that used some similar elements last year, and in terms of the design, in terms of the way some of the cards work together, but really only in the loosest sense. I walked away from that process with some ideas on how I would have preferred to do it, but that's not what the client wanted to do, and that was a completely different theme and a pretty different set of mechanics, but it had some familiar card interactions. And when I sat down to really, you know, and started thinking about how I wanted to do this myself, and then the idea of the vampires hit me, immediately those images just started filling into my head, and yeah, that was it. There was no turning back. That's what it was going to be. It was about ridiculous cartoon vampires who just aren't very good at what they do.
Yeah, because I was going to say, some of your previous work, especially Hail Dorado, the artist you worked with on that one was a little bit more graphic and...
Yeah, yeah.
And this was
a very different process. You know, it was... my own work has always been pretty cartoony, and the graphic novel I'm working on is a lot more... It's probably the most realistic artwork I've done yet. So this was kind of a reaction to that in a way as well. It was, you know, I wanted to do something completely different as kind of a palate cleanser for a while. So even though it's still, you know, the same kind of playing with horror tropes that I often do, it's even simpler and even more cartoony than most of the stuff I draw.
Do you have like an idea for like a spinoff already, or have you been thinking about doing like a spinoff of this games or other games?
I should finish tonight the first expansion for this game, which we unlocked as a stretch goal during the Kickstarter campaign. As for other games, there are, if you look through the set, there are cameos by other kinds of monsters, and I think it would be kind of fun to build entire decks around those other monsters and then have the vampires cameo in their games.
Because I think I spot Cthulhu in there.
Yeah, yeah, there's Cthulhu in there. You know, the Frankenstein monster shows up. There's a werewolf in there. And the expansion I'm working on has a number of surprise monster cameos in it. So, yeah, I think there's definitely some room there to expand into other monster properties. But yeah, I could also see myself reskinning the thing entirely. You know, pirate theme, science fiction theme. Really, the nice thing about this gameplay is that it will work for just about anything. The most interesting mechanic, I think, in the game is, I don't know if you've read the rules yet, is the angry mob mechanic. And that's what lends it really well to monster stuff, because all those classic monster movies always, you know, eventually the villagers gather their pitchforks and their torches and come after the monsters. And, you know, I made that part of the game. So any property, any theme that, you know, that you've got that kind of mechanic in, I think this game could be reskinned for that purpose.
Well, one thing that I wanted to touch on earlier that Jonathan kind of, had in his point and that you've answered already was that it did seem like it was a game that was, I haven't gotten a chance to play it yet, but as far as like watching the trailer and getting a little bit of the idea of what's going on from you, it seemed like it was very expandable. Like, you know, you could start here and then create a whole universe of these, like you were talking about, switching themes or expanding on the theme, like utilizing some of the cards and characters and kind of giving them their own expansion set. And my question originally was, is it going to be a TCG, a trading card game? But so this is going to be, it's a standalone game, whereas you don't need to collect any more pieces to play this game.
No, it's not a trading card game. And I don't really design trading card games. Now, don't get me wrong, I like them, and I appreciate them from a design perspective. In fact, years ago, I don't know if any of you or how long any of you have been involved with trading card games, but years ago I worked for Daedalus Games when they were doing the first edition of the Shadow Fist trading card game. And great game system. I like it, and I really enjoy those kinds of games. But it's not something I tend to design because they're incredibly expensive to produce. There are lots of cards. There's a lot of art to produce, more art than I can produce by myself, so I would have to hire other people. So yeah, the expense of producing a trading card game, coupled with the fact that you never know if they're going to take hold in the marketplace, so they're pretty risky, the expense and the risk together make me kind of averse to going into the realm of trading card games. Maybe after I've got a few more successful properties under my belt and a little more weight behind the brand name, I might look into it, because it would certainly be fun to do that. But yeah, not yet.
Just one more quick comment, then I'll give the mic back. I played a lot of trading card games, and yeah, that it's expensive on the other end too. The actual buying of the trading cards and playing, it's nice to see a game that looks fun. It looks really entertaining. Something I could play with my kids, like you said, and you know, it's nice to know that when it's coming out that there may be expansions, but it's not something that's going to be, you know, like trading card games. I've played several of them, and they're ridiculously expensive just to play as a hobby. So
it's really expensive, and I dislike the fact that people with, too often the player with more money wins because that player will have access to a wider array of cards and a wider array of more powerful and, you know, rare cards. And that's not the kind of experience I was shooting for with this one. I wanted something that there are expansions there that if you want to expand your game, you can, but none of them are mandatory for play.
Well, yeah, and you talk about wanting to maybe reskin the game, do spin-offs of the game, and you mentioned you're in the middle of writing another graphic novel. Is that right?
I'm writing it and drawing it. Yeah. I work almost entirely alone these days, which, I mean, and I've had some great collaborators over the years, but really I find that at this point in my life, I'm happiest working alone.
Well, and that's what I was thinking. You have... it seems like, you know, you have so much on your plate. Is it ever overwhelming and you need to, you know, go just take a break from everything? Or how do you manage everything that you need to get done in a normal fashion?
I make a lot of checklists. I have a lot of to-do lists. And, yeah, it does get overwhelming. But there are times when you have to force yourself to take a break. So I have things that I do that recharge my batteries. You know, I read a lot, both comics and, you know, and regular books. And, there are some TV shows that I keep up with, and, you know, I watch a lot of movies. And, you know, the nice thing about comics and games, though, is that even when you're relaxing, you're kind of doing some research anyway. You're still kind of working. So you never have to feel guilty about sitting down to play a game of Elder Sign on your phone, because at the same time you're kind of dissecting that game engine while you play it. You don't have to feel guilty about reading that graphic novel because, you know, you're studying at the feet of a fellow professional. So
right.
as long as you keep that in context and make yourself take breaks, you can do it. Honestly, if I could, I wouldn't sleep at all, and I would work all the time, and I would crank out everything I want to make. But
right.
I do the best I can with the time I've got.
You can do that. It's just the end results get kind of hairy.
Yeah.
So this is just, you buy the starter pack and you're good to go, or are you...
Yeah, it's a standalone.
It's a standalone game, and like I said, there's an expansion for it. Right now, the expansion is exclusive to the Kickstarter campaign. So the only way you can get the expansion at first will be through the Kickstarter campaign.
Okay.
There will be a non-exclusive version of the expansion released later down the line. But again, it's not mandatory for play. It's just if you want to add more cards to the game, you can. And it does add a couple of new mechanics. So, you know, once people feel that they've got a good handle on the strategies of the game, because the actual mechanics are very simple, but the strategies are fairly complex, and I'm really looking forward to more people digging into the guts of the thing and having fun with that,
right.
Because it's deceptively simple looking. But yeah, the expansion adds some more mechanics, so once people are comfortable with the game, they may want the expansion just to take the game to a new level.
Right.
And where will people be able to get this? Is it already out? Is it just online? Is it...
The Kickstarter campaign still has a couple of weeks to go, it hasn't even gone to press yet. Then after that, I'll be selling it through the Vampsylvania website. And honestly, I haven't decided whether or not to go through retail distribution or not. I have, after my years in the comic book industry, I'm a little averse to retail distribution models, to be blunt. So I haven't decided yet what I'm going to do there. You know, I think, anybody who's had to work closely with Diamond Comic Distribution for any length of time has kind of a skewed perspective on the distribution of things in general.
Now, I'm kind of askew on some of these things. What is a Kickstarter?
What Kickstarter is it's a form of, it's called crowdfunding. Basically, when it comes to something like a game, it basically enables you to create a proof of concept video and to create kind of a marketing campaign and use that so that people will effectively pre-order the product. And, by doing that, you can then, you can produce the thing with a lot less risk. So what it has done is it's effectively given anybody who has the ability to execute a professional grade product, but not necessarily the capital to produce a professional grade product, it's enabled them to crowdfund it through basically this pre-order system, along with, you know, exclusive rewards as enticements and things like that for people who are early backers. So, in the case of this game, I ran the campaign for only $2,300. That's all I needed to produce. My first thought was, I'm just going to publish 100 copies of this game. It'll be a strictly small press operation. Needless to say, I'm going to be able to produce a lot more than that, given the success of the campaign. It's been a lot more successful than I expected.
Yeah, so how has it been working on your side of Kickstarter? I mean, everybody knows, you know, how, you know, you sponsor and everything, but how is it? Is it a good website, you know, to put up your projects on, or was it kind of difficult to figure out?
The thing with Kickstarter is that there's a lot of documentation out there if you're willing to do the homework. And I was willing to do that homework. You know, I come from a research background, so I had no problem digging into the guts of this thing before I ever posted anything online. And a lot of the advice I had seen was that Kickstarter is a lot more work than it appears to be. Not because there's anything wrong with the system. There's not. It works like a dream. I have zero complaints. And frankly, I'm impressed with the tools they give people who are funding campaigns, as far as analytics and so forth. But you really do need to do some research, and you really have to make sure that you're ready for the time commitment that it's going to take. I put hours of work into the Kickstarter every day. I worked on the Kickstarter campaign page for about 3 weeks before the campaign went live because I wanted to make sure it was perfect. You know, you have to make sure that you don't want typos in the marketing copy for your Kickstarter, because then people are going to question whether or not you're going to be able to execute the product professionally. If you couldn't execute your web page professionally, what's the product going to look like?
It's like you're basically going to a board meeting to pitch an idea, but instead of a board, it's the entire world.
That's awesome. That is a fantastic comparison, because that's really what it is. Except instead of a board, you're talking directly to what are effectively your shareholders. No, they don't end up with an ownership stake in the property. But, you know, those folks that you reach out to, in the audience, they become emotionally invested. You know, there are a lot of people for whom Kickstarter is, you know, backing games on Kickstarter is part of the gaming hobby for them. They really like doing it. They really like that sense of, I helped make this happen. You know, you want to make sure you give those folks your absolute best. And if you do, they'll respond positively and they'll let other people know, hey, this person's putting out a good product, and it'll increase your hits from there. But yeah, it's all about doing your due diligence and making sure that you've got things figured out from the outset. Know what you're getting into and do your homework before you start the campaign.
So what was your reaction when all of a sudden you put it up there and you woke up the next morning and lo and behold, oh my goodness, it's funded.
I was excited. I was very excited. We had a really good first few hours, and I expected that. The first few hours of most campaigns are pretty good because Kickstarter has a number of different search utilities. And like I said, there is a segment of the gaming public that they spend a lot of time on Kickstarter because that's part of the hobby for them. So, you know, it showed up in the newly funding lists and so it got some early hits. And my social network is pretty active. They're a pretty passionate bunch. And so they were all hitting the campaign at the same time. They were all sharing links. They were all pledging at the same time as Kickstarter was listing this as new. And all of a sudden, it ended up on the popular list. And just spending a good chunk of that first day on the popular list is what skyrocketed the pledges. And I stay up late because I stay up late in the night drawing and or writing depending on the day. And so I was up when it hit the 100% mark. Ah. And It was awesome. I mean, I was doing some cheerleading on social media.
Let's crack open the beer and cheers.
Yeah. You know, I was like, hey, we're really close, people. And, you know, then people started sharing more links. And social media is a huge part of promoting these games because, for every 100 people that saw one of the posts that I put on the Vansylvania Facebook page, which really itself does not have all that many likes. It's only got a couple hundred likes or so. But Facebook has diagnostics that lets me know how many people see each post. And even though that page was only getting, you know, each post was only getting a couple hundred, you know, there were only a couple hundred people that liked the page, each post was getting like 3,000 views from people sharing it in their network. So, I mean, that's another key part of the whole Kickstarter thing, which is make sure that you've got that audience engaged. But yeah, I was doing some last minute cheerleading saying we're really close, guys. And people started sharing the link again. And the funny thing about Kickstarter is people love momentum. And if it looks like a project is going to, if it looks like it's about to fund successfully, more people will get behind it. If it looks like it's about to do it in under 24 hours, even more people will get behind it because they want to be part of that experience. They want to say, I was one of the people that backed it on the first 24 hours. And it turns the thing into kind of an event for everybody. But yeah, I was incredibly excited. Mentally, I had prepared for a very long month. I had prepared for a campaign that was going to be a tough slog from minute one to the end. And literally 24 hours later, I'm thinking, well, okay, what do I start doing for stretch goals? the complete opposite. So, yeah, I'm thrilled with how it's turned out.
Well, that's a good point. So with as much success as you've gotten off of this, well, as if you create, you know, expansions or different versions of the game, will you go back to Kickstarter for those games?
You know, I will almost certainly, I mean, I'm definitely going to use Kickstarter for some other games. And I don't know whether or not I would, crowdfund and expand another expansion for this game. It'll kind of depend on what I end up doing retail wise after the campaign's over. It's a question I just don't know how to answer yet.
Yeah.
But each time I launch a new product, I'm absolutely going to go to Kickstarter. Because it's a great place. It's just a great way to do it. Because it enables you to build an audience in to the game before it ever hits the market, you know? So instead of waiting for people to walk into a store and discover your game out of all the other thousands of games on that, on the store shelves, instead of waiting for that to happen, you've already got a very small but very passionate group of people who's been telling their friends for months that they can't wait for this game they backed to finally come out. So it's a great way to launch a new brand. And every time I launch a new property, I intend to use Kickstarter as my crowdfunding platform. It's been a terrific experience, and I see no reason not to repeat it.
Now, you're a traditional artist. A lot of your stuff is definitely traditional. But with this one, you've been playing with a...
It's like a chibi
program. Yeah, it's chibi looking, but you've been doing it on a computer-based program, if I'm correct, right?
I have... This is going to shock you. I have not drawn on a piece of paper since November.
Wow.
Last year I made the switch to working with a Wacom Cintiq, and it took me a while to feel like I was able to do everything on the Cintiq that I was able to do with my traditional tools. And then once I felt like I could do that, then all of a sudden I realized I was learning new things faster than I had in years. Because you can't screw up. You know, if I'm working on a page...
Delete button.
yeah, exactly. If I'm working on a physical page and I decide I want to try a new inking technique and I screw that up, I've got to bust out a new piece of paper, and who knows what I'll have lost in that process. Or I'll have to try painting over whatever I screwed up and then working over it. And I mean, there are ways you can do it, but they're time consuming. They involve multiple physical media, cutting and pasting. And then there's the whole psychological wear factor of I screwed that up and now I'm a little ticked off about it and I got to keep working. Whereas, yeah, in Manga Studio, I have an undo button where I can just create a new layer. And I can experiment on this layer. I can even call that layer experimental crap layer and just play with stuff on there until I figure out how to do what I want it to do. And, switching to digital it's blown my work wide open. It's made me a lot faster. It's enabled me to do a lot of things I had difficulty with before, but was not able to do nearly as easily. I don't see myself, I've got boxes full of art supplies here that are just going to waste. Probably going to give them away.
So do you think? So are you going to switch completely to digital, or have you already, or will you still, you know, maybe go bust out a piece of paper every now and then just for giggles?
I have a sketchbook, and literally it's kind of funny because literally the last thing I drew in that sketchbook was the concept art for Vampsylvania. It was that little doodle of that vampire that has ended up kind of being the mascot for the game. That was the last thing I drew in that sketchbook. And I've still got that sketchbook, and it's still sitting there with a pencil and eraser right next to it, waiting for that moment of inspiration. Because the nice thing about the sketchbook is I can take it everywhere with me, you know, whereas I can't take my digital studio everywhere with me. So I haven't had to use it since. But if I need to, it's there. As far as producing the work, as far as getting comics done or creating games, I would consider myself as having switched completely to digital. A sketchbook for having concept art is one thing. I don't see myself doing any more finished art in physical media. It's going to be all digital from now on.
But some of the stuff, if you do hit on some things for like a, you know, an exclusive or whatnot, you know, you probably bust out a pad and pen and do a sketch if you want to do like an exclusive sketch or something like that. You could.
Oh, sure. In fact, one of the rewards for this campaign, if somebody actually wants to, they can even buy the original concept sketch. You know, so sometimes people like that. I did a convention last fall, you know, and I did some sketching while I was there. But yeah, I just it's a lot more satisfying for me to work digitally, and it works a lot better. And then I don't have to deal with, you know, art supplies are expensive, and it's especially when you're particular. I use a particular kind of brush, and that particular kind of brush has grown increasingly more expensive in the last few years. And I use a particular kind of paper, and the quality of that paper has actually been declining a bit in the last few years. So between the increased expense and the quality getting kind of spotty, and I've talked with a bunch of my fellow pros, and they've had the same complaints about the brushes and the paper. So it's not just my supply chain. It was time. Switching to digital is a very expensive proposition, but then once you've done it, it's hard to go back.
Once you go digital, you never go back.
That's kind of where I'm at.
Digital's the new black.
On on your award thing that you said you were going to do, give away the original concept drawing. Now,
right.
Were you planning on autographing that as another prize, or how are you going to do that?
What that is it's, you know, each time, and, you know, I'll go, you guys probably understand this, but I'll go ahead and explain it in case anyone listening doesn't. People can pledge at different levels of support, and different levels of support have different rewards. You know, the most basic is, you know, copies of the game itself. But in this case, if they pledge, it's one of the highest levels of support, and, but there are only two of them. One person is going to get the sketch, and yeah, it'll be signed, and you know, I'll make a little certificate for it because it is literally the last of the only physical piece of art from Bamsylvania that exists. The rest of it was all created digitally, and then another person is going to get the handmade prototype that I used for playtesting before I had a prototype built by my manufacturer, which is what you see in the video. What you see is the actual, you know, the professional product. But during playtesting, I had a hand-built prototype, and I'm gonna, you know, that's a reward as well.
So you had to actually go out and make the professional product before you had funds. So that's something
I think
a lot of people don't understand either. That if you want to look something nice and professional, like you said.
Yeah, I have boxes upon boxes of prototyping supplies here. You know, blank playing cards, you know, pawns, dice, things of that nature. Because I'm always making new stuff. So yeah, what I ended up doing is, you know, I drew the art so quickly that I designed the cards, I printed them out, and I, you know, on cardstock, and, just used that as a prototype, and it worked like a champ. I also have blank playing cards, and I will occasionally just write things on those with marker. You know, while I test things out before I spend any time, on the artwork. Or, you know, sometimes I will, and in the case of the Vampsylvania prototype, you know, I didn't actually print this one on cardstock. I printed this one on paper, then cut the images out and glued them onto the playing cards that originally just had numbers written on them. So if you look at the playing cards, if you hold them up to the light, you can actually see underneath the artwork where I had written on them in marker as to what function the card served. And then I put the whole thing in a card sleeve so that it doesn't fall apart. So it's a pretty labor intensive process to create these prototypes, but I find it's worth doing. And, you know, you don't have to have finished artwork to create something to play test with. Mm-hmm. But now that I have done a game where I did have the finished artwork for people to play test with, and I saw people's reaction to it, I think I'm going to try to have at least part of the artwork done on every game I playtest from now on, because it really hooks people in. They really get engaged quickly.
So did the art side of this game take the most, you know, brain work and figuring out, or was it the actual game itself of how it ran that you found either the hardest to come up with or just the more fun in general?
The creation of the game itself, the way the mechanics would work, was a lot more time-consuming. And, you know, like I said earlier, it wasn't a difficult process because I've got a method down by this point.
Mm-hmm.
But it was definitely the more labor-intensive process. The artwork was incredibly fast because, for one thing, it's a very simple style. You know, it's very it's very graphic, very, very bold, kind of a Sunday newspaper comic kind of look.
Right.
And, you know, so it was a lot easier to do than it would have been had I been, say, drawing an actual comic book. And then a lot of those elements, once I had created them in the digital environment, I could repurpose them over and over again. So, you know, once I had a basic head shape down, I could import that basic head shape into another piece of artwork and then add different hair or different hat, you know, things of that nature. So, you know, there are a lot of shortcuts I was able to use digitally. Plus, once I had the backgrounds of the cards designed, that stays basically the same. All you're changing is the text. So if you're thinking in terms of, if you think of your game set kind of like Legos, you know what you want to build, and you know you've got these kinds of pieces to do it with. If you store all these things in such a manner that you can access those pieces individually, you can save yourself a ton of time which is another thing you can do only digitally. You can't really do that on paper. So it was yet another advantage for in the digital environment that made the art process go even quicker. The art on this one, it was one of the easiest art jobs I've ever had to do. Part of that was because of the process. Part of it was because I was having a ridiculous amount of fun drawing these goofy little characters.
I especially like the Cthulhu one.
That one, yeah. A friend of mine said he wants that one as a neck tattoo.
Cute.
Well, I can't wait to play it and try it out. It looks like a lot of fun. Like I said, I enjoy games, TCGs, but I also enjoy a lot of standalone games, and I'm interested in seeing how this one plays. I have an idea of how I think it's going to play, and I think it's going to be fast and pretty fun. So I can't wait to actually get to play test it or play it, the version you sent us for the review. So that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, I think you'll get a kick out of it. It's the thing that I think people I think the thing that people are not prepared for is how the angry mob works. Because, you know, there are games where you are competitive and there are games where you are collaborative. You know, things like Pandemic or Arkham Horror, you know, where you have to work together to defeat the game. In Vampsylvania, you're fighting against each other, but there's also that ticking clock of the angry mob. And if the angry mob, if you're so busy tearing each other apart that you're not paying attention, the angry mob will beat you all.
Right.
So there are times when you may have to just suck it up and actually help your opponent so that the angry mob doesn't end up winning the game. So it's that little element of collaborative play shoved into a competitive game is really going to mess with people. And it's a lot of fun. And I find that a lot of people, their first time through, they lose because they're not paying that much attention. They're so busy messing with each other, they forget that angry mob is there and it costs them the game.
Now, in the preview, you talk about the angry mob and everything, and you say that there's a certain number set for the angry mob. Can you tell us what that number is, or do you not want to share that information with us? Or
there are actually two different ways that can work, because there's a place in the rules where I have some optional rules, including one variation of how the angry mob works that I actually prefer, but I designed the game, so I'm used to it by now. So not everybody's going to want to play with it this way right out of the box. But it is in the cool.
Play the creator. Play the creator.
Yeah, it was funny. I played it with a bunch of friends one time, and absolutely cleaned house. And one of my friends was like, "Oh, big surprise! You won the game you designed." But this optional rule is in there for people that want to use it. But what it basically means is when there's a small deck within the deck that is villager cards. And every time that the players, you know, compete during a hunt to try to capture the villager, it is possible that nobody captures the villager. And when that happens, the villager goes to the angry mob pile. The game ends in one of a couple of different ways. You can actually burn through the entire deck a certain number of times. That's the number of times equal to the number of players at the table. That's what the little chips are for. They keep track of how many times you've burned through the deck.
Mm.
That ends the game, and then everybody tallies up their score and then compares it to what's sitting in the angry mob pile, and the angry mob pile lowers everybody's score, and it might end up costing you the victory. You can also run out of villagers, and that'll end the game, and everybody tallies up their scores in the same way. This alternate rule, actually, the game ends when a number of villagers equal to one more than the number of players is in the angry mob pile. It makes it happen a lot faster.
Okay, so say like four people are playing, and if there's a fifth villager in the angry mob...
Game over.
Game over, okay.
Yep, and it makes it a lot faster. I mean, it's a pretty fast-paced game anyway, but it makes it end a lot faster. And it also greatly increases the possibility that you're going to lose. Because
you have the time to accumulate points.
Exactly. You don't have as much time to capture people, especially if you've got someone. The really interesting thing is there are a number of people that have certain kinds of play style.
Mm-hmm.
That incredibly aggressive player who just sits down to mess with everybody, that player becomes really complicated in a game where you also have to make sure that you know, not only are you trying to win, but you're trying to make sure that nobody, that not the whole group ends up losing.
Right.
So now, that guy can end up being a real spoiler.
Right. Now, you said that once you capture a villager, there's a way for them to escape. Is there certain ways for them to escape, or how
once
does that...
Once a villager is captured, the villager is captured. When I say escape, I mean, let's say you've got three people playing, and nobody has the cards to capture the villager out there. Then that villager is said to have escaped, and that's when it goes to the angry mob.
Okay, so, you talk about, you know, different playing personalities, but with the cards themselves, do you choose your vampire at random? Do, different vampires have different pros and cons to them, or is it all very level across the board?
It's a level playing field because it's a lot more abstract than that. The cards you're playing with, they represent some of the cards represent certain vampire abilities,
mm-hmm.
or just stylistic approaches. But you know, there's really nothing that makes your character. Your character doesn't really exist in the context of the game. You know, whereas you take the role of a young vampire. You know, you don't have a character sheet like a role-playing game or,
right.
You know, or it's not even like a Magic the Gathering kind of thing where you've got specific traits for characters and creatures on the cards. It's a little more abstract than that. So, you know, you're playing this role, and then these cards, they'll have bonuses and penalties that, you know, you want to play as many bonuses on yourself mm-hmm. as possible while playing penalties on other people to reduce their effectiveness. And you'll combine that with the dice roll to try to capture the villager. Where the strategy comes into it, though, is that you have only a few plays per turn.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have an infinite number of cards, and you can only have so many plays on a turn. Plus, a lot of the penalties are designed not to affect the other players, but are designed to actually make the villager stronger. And so when you're trying to work against your fellow players, you are also running the risk of making it so that you can't beat that villager either. Yeah.
Out of nowhere, Buffy the Village Slayer will come out.
Exactly. So, you know, you're really spending a lot of time weighing your options in terms of, you know, how much risk am I willing to take here? And the cool thing about it is that you don't have to think about it at all. You can just play and let the chips fall where they may. But if you want to start digging into the strategy of it and the probability and the likelihood of it, that level of gameplay is there for you, which is cool because then that means you can have people of different skill levels playing in the same game and having a good time.
Right.
I had a reviewer who, he told me he played the game with his kindergartner and his third grader just the other night, and they beat him. But he still had a great deal of, he still had a lot of fun.
Right. And that's what this game is for. It's there for fun. I mean, it's not like you're going to pick up the cards and throw them in a fit of anger. I mean,
maybe.
You still might. It depends on who you are.
Yeah.
You don't know me.
Yeah. It's just not that kind of game. You know, it's like you're not going to invest hours in it. You're not going to invest a fortune in it. It's definitely a casual game. And, you know, there's a lot of, we live in kind of a golden era of casual games, to be honest.
Mm-hmm.
Kickstarter has been a tremendous shot in the arm for the game industry in a lot of ways. Because, again, it's a way for game makers to communicate directly with their audience as opposed to trying to convince a corporation that this is what the audience wants. Which is how we ended up with so much bland corporate product for so long. And now we have so many great indie games that... I know people who can't store them all.
Mm.
We have, I live in Portland, Oregon, and we have some great game stores here. We've got one that I go to. It's like half the size of a block. It's absolutely massive.
Wow.
And there's no way I could ever play everything in there. And I love having that problem.
Right.
It's a good problem to have.
Good problem to have. So we live in a great time for casual games, for strategy games, for every kind of game you can imagine, but casual games in particular.
Besides the Kickstarter, we'll have that link up there. Is the website available yet, or are you still working on that, Michael?
Oh no, Vampsylvania.com is it's been live since the campaign launched. That was one of the things that I was planning. I wanted it all to launch at the same time. There's not a lot of content on there simply because the campaign is still running. But once the game has come out, that's where the FAQ will be. I'm working on an actual play video so that some folks just can't learn a game from reading the directions. You know, they're more visual learners, and a smart game publisher addresses that, and will create an actual play video so that people have examples of how the game is supposed to work. So yeah, there'll be the FAQ on there, any rules clarifications. I'm going to invite people to share their cool house rules with me if they come up with cool house rules, so that then we can get those spread all over the world as well. It's going to be a lot of fun. Now, the website's live now. You can check it out. But really, right now, the heart and soul of the game is on its Kickstarter page and on its Facebook page.
Because players make up their own rules, no matter which rules you put down.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's going to probably about do it for tonight, because the rest of the questions we might have will be probably after we actually play the game.
Okay.
We just wanted to get it out there. We're going to try to do a quick turnaround with this for everybody listening out there. We're hoping to get it up within the next couple of days. So we should have about 10 days, maybe a few more days left, because there's 15 days at the time of this recording to help pledge. If you're interested, go to Kickstarter and look up Vampsylvania. That's Vampsylvania. It's very popular, like Michael was saying. So once you start typing in Vamps, yeah, it should pop up pretty fast for you, because it's one of the hot items right now on Kickstarter. If you're interested, just want to take a quick peek at Vampsylvania.com. You can go there. Like Michael said, it will be a few days before it gets more content on there, but it is forthcoming. And we did get a print and play. Like I said, Michael did send that to us. My son Logan, he's the gamer, the big gamer of the family. He's working on getting that all cut out and getting the pieces gathered up so we can actually sit down and play. And we want to have you back on, Michael, to kind of discuss some of the stuff we found and see if we were doing it right or not.
Excellent. I look forward to hearing your feedback.
I think that's going to do it for us. Is there anything else you want to mention real fast? Any other people you want to mention or websites before we
go? There is one, and it's another Kickstarter game that I'd like to mention, just because I think people who like this game might really like that one too. And it's called The Working Dead. And it's basically a zombie outbreak combined with The Office.
Hey, yes.
Yes.
If you go to my updates on my Kickstarter campaign for Vampsylvania, I mentioned them a couple times. So there's a direct link there. We actually kind of met online. Our campaign started at around the same time. And I think it's a more adult game, but if you have the sense of humor, if you like Vampsylvania, you probably have the sense of humor that will appreciate this game as well too. So I would check that out as well.
Okay, cool. Well, again, this is C. Michael Hall. I've been saying Michael because I've been friends with him for a few years. He moved away from us though. He's up in Oregon now instead of Kansas. So we hope everything's doing good for you. Sounds like it is. Fresh air, fresh start, and now you got a job to do.
That's right.
But we enjoyed talking with Michael. Like I said, go to Kickstarter. It's under Vampsylvania. It's a card and dice game with cute cartoon monsters. I've enjoyed looking at them. I kind of put it in like the Herman Monsters type style almost, and like April said, a chibi style. So if you're into that type of style, I think you'll enjoy this. It's a single play, a standalone play. So this is one that I think most of you will be able to pick up and enjoy with your family. And again, we'll have Michael back on in probably a few weeks. We'll probably have Michael back on and talk about the dynamics of the game a little bit more, because we talked mainly about the creation of the game tonight. But Michael, we appreciate you coming on with us again. It's been fun.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it. Always a good time.
And we hope everybody out there has been enjoying listening to us. We've been having fun. Hope you've had fun. We will see everybody the next go around. Have a good one, everybody.
Thanks. Bye.
Bye.
See ya.
Thank you for listening to Comic Pop Library. We welcome your comments and suggestions by emailing us at admin@comicpoplibrary.com. All emails submitted become the property of Comic Pop Library and are subject for use in our show. We would also appreciate it if you would spread the word about Comic Pop Library by posting about us on Twitter, Facebook, or just tell someone about us. This podcast is not endorsed by any publisher, distributor, or studio, and it is intended for entertainment and information purposes only. The views and comments of the show hosts are their own and are not reflective in any business, entity, or organization associated with ComicPopLibrary.com.